Thank you very much, and it's really great to be here. And before getting anywhere near starting, I really want to thank you, Guy. Thank you for all the support that you've given me. And thank you also for the flexibility, one, because I was working a little bit, perhaps, on whilst I was doing the thesis, but also because I was also just an NGO person and somehow trying to make my way in the academic world, which proved to be challenging on a number of fronts. My thesis was on international organizations in the broad sense, looking at remedies and reparation against international organizations for breaches of human rights and humanitarian law. I thought for this presentation that I would limit myself a little bit, looking at the issue of peacekeeping, because in a way it's a good lens through which you can see the challenges in this very complicated sphere. I came to this topic both through my work at Redress looking at reparations, but also from some of my work with basically post-conflict situations in Rwanda and Bosnia, and seeing how international organizations impacted on the lives of actual people. And throughout the presentation and my thesis as a whole, one of the things which kept making me question, which is what should we be looking for, small fixes or fundamental changes? And I think what I came to the conclusion was that if we focus on the small fixes, then we're really only going to get small solutions, and that actually the problems are quite fundamental. With respect to peacekeeping, obviously the roles of peacekeeping has changed significantly, but the accountability framework has not kept up. The accountability framework, we have the draft articles on the responsibility of international organizations, which recognize that international organizations are responsible for breaches attributable to them. There's an obligation to pay reparations, to make reparations. It's both a procedural and a substantive obligation, but it's state-centric in its conceptualization. Individuals who are not affiliated with the organizations are not really considered by the text, and in fact, with respect to most mechanisms, whether they're administrative frameworks or other kinds of mechanisms for reparations, individuals have very little recourse before international organizations when they've come to a problem. The administrative systems that are in place are extremely weak. Mostly they offer recommendations. They're not really capable of enforcement outside of very limited circumstances. And with respect to domestic courts, immunities and the lack of standing often will impede both access to domestic and international courts. The UN has said before the International Law Commission that it has a lex specialis on how it handles claims. Basically, it said that the way we deal with claims is our own model. But actually, when you look behind that, you realize that its model is to not deal with claims. So I'm going to give four examples of that. From the peacekeeping context, we have four major different types of issues. There's the issues which relate to the limitation of mandate, where Srebrenica, Rwanda, where there's been a failure to act, which has had horrible consequences. Then there's the scenarios of operational failures, such as the Haiti cholera epidemic or the lead poisoning in Kosovo, which led to many deaths in Kosovo of Roma, mainly Roma people, as a result of negligence. Third, Third, there's the human rights and international humanitarian law abuses in the course of duty, or somewhat in the course of duty. Here we can think of tortured detainees in Somalia. We can think of sexual exploitation and abuse, including rape, trafficking, and other abuses. We can also think of military excesses. And fourth category is car accidents and destruction of property. Now, which do you think has been dealt with the best? Car accidents and destruction of property. So essentially, that's been really well handled. So I'm going to leave that out for the moment. We're going to move back to mandate limitations, Rwanda, Srebrenica. So we all know that the failure to protect, which led to a number of commissions of inquiry, apologies, Senate reports, basically, the UN Security Council never actually gave the peacekeeping missions the appropriate mandate in order to step up. Whether different troops operating in those circumstances should have done more is an open question. And in fact, in cases brought in the Netherlands and Belgium, both governments were, in different contexts, seen to be responsible for, in the case of the Dutch, the failure to protect the stronghold at Srebrenica. In the case of the Belgians, the failure to stay and protect the Belgian school in Rwanda. When the Belgian troops left, the people who were there were simply slaughtered. So there's clearly an issue of attribution. What level of responsibility do the states have? But nonetheless, even if the states have a certain level of responsibility, I've also argued that the UN as an institution also has responsibility. With respect to these mandate issues, with respect to international peace and security, all the case law has gone in one single direction, which has been that international peace and security is central. There cannot be any court who can look into these types of questions because, in a way, it's beyond questioning. Somewhat similar, if one takes an example from a domestic context to a political offenses exception where you cannot look into what the executive is doing. It's inappropriate for a court to look at that. But of course, the UN Security Council doesn't have the same checks and balances, arguably, that would exist in a domestic context. So my view is that I really don't see, and I don't think the arguments hold, that you cannot have scrutiny of UN Security Council decisions. Second layer is the operational failures. Haiti cholera case, Roma lead poisoning. The first line of attack of the United Nations has been, in both cases, no, we didn't do it, we weren't responsible. It sounds like a very silly line of attack. It's a factual line of attack, but actually it's the most successful. Why? Because there's no access of individuals to a court to challenge that assumption. So the mere lack of access to any sort of legal forum in which to challenge the assertion of the body which is held up to be responsible turns out to be the most effective legal defense. It wasn't us. There's no way to disprove that. The second part of the argument is actually quite interesting, and it has to do with the UN Immunities Convention of 1946. Article 29 says that the UN has to provide an alternative mode of settlement when it involves disputes of a private law character or disputes involving any official of the United Nations who, by reason of his official position, enjoys immunity if immunity has not been waived by the Secretary General. So for cases involving the United Nations as itself, in its institutional capacity, we're really in the first part of that test, whether or not the dispute is of private law character. So here is why, when I said the UN did well on car accidents, I was talking about this, because basically the UN has interpreted private law as car accidents. But these in Haiti or in Kosovo, are we dealing with private or public law when it comes to failure to take health precautions with respect to latrines? The UN has argued that this was a fundamental position of policy which shouldn't be subject to any kind of scrutiny. So there's two arguments here. One is that it's a personal injury claim, which shouldn't necessarily be deemed as public. The second type of argument is that, yes, indeed, it was public, but the fact that the UN Convention doesn't give a specific requirement to create a remedy shouldn't stop the UN from creating a remedy. Because actually, the fact that there may be immunity doesn't mean that there's no responsibility. Responsibility is there. There's a need to create a remedy. So you have both of those decisions. Interestingly, the Human Rights Advisory Panel in Kosovo just last month, in February, came out with a decision, a damning decision, on the violation of UNMIC, of Roma rights to health, to life, to torture, etc., etc. It advised the UN to acknowledge this violation of rights and to pay compensation. But the Human Rights Advisory Panel is simply that, an advisory panel. The UN has not paid compensation in any single case when it's been recommended to do so by this advisory panel. Third line of cases is, as I said, torture, individual cases of sexual abuse, rape, military excesses. Here, the line of attack has been to focus not on the institution as a whole, but on the rogue officials committing horrible attacks. So there, the UN has recognized the need for individuals to be prosecuted, individual peacekeepers, but actually when it comes down to it, and we see this with the recent Central African Republic report, the inquiry report, the UN has done very little to ensure that this happens. For a combination of reasons, troop-contributing countries have the main responsibility to prosecute, but actually the legislation in troop-contributing countries is usually inadequate. Secondly, there's a lot of other reasons linked to underreporting, a culture of silence, and the wish for the UN not to rock the boat as to why these cases haven't been properly investigated or prosecuted. But with respect to the issue of the organization itself, here the main challenge has been on whether the acts in question are official acts or private acts. And here the UN has taken a very narrow approach to what may constitute an official act, which has meant that in most contexts it has deemed these acts not to be subject to its reparation framework. We know from international humanitarian law that at least in terms of international conflict, that there shouldn't be a distinction between the obligation to repair, whether it was a private or a public, an official act or a private act. But that hasn't applied into the peacekeeping context. So in my view, the biggest challenges is access to court, finding ways to challenge before an independent body what the UN's first what the UN's position is. The second is to strengthen the internal administrative systems so that they can be more independent and could provide a more open and fair forum where these claims can be addressed. And there's a need to apply standards for remedies that relate to the violations that we're talking about, not to the type of perpetrator. And that would be the start of a solution, but certainly not the end. Thanks.
Thank you very much.